try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to deal with it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you gotta hang tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
Welcome to Super Podcast, and I'm your awesome host, Super Marthy, and I'm joined with a returning guest who has like a billion names, but we'll just call him Nick Bosworth for today. So, hello, Nick.
Hello, Marcy, and yes, I have 10,000 retarded names.
Yes. I'll stick to calling you Nick. I won't call you Elder Predator or Seth Gecko or that dude who's staring at me outside my window.
How'd you know that was me?
Lame joke.
You know, I travel across the ocean just to peek in your window, you know?
Oh, yeah. Lots of people do. There's like a whole crowd out there.
Everybody wants a peek at Marcy.
Tis true.
Including that Kupka fella. Kupka.
With my awesome Aussie accent.
Exactly. He's not here to defend himself, so ha.
Ha, take that, Kupka.
Exactly. Well, thanks for having me.
No problemo. Thanks for coming back on the show. And we have an interesting topic for today's podcast. We're going to go back in time to the year that we were born. And discuss the films that were released, well, the year that we were born. But we're going to be discussing probably the highlights or our favourite ones because, you know, a lot of movies came out those years and we don't have enough time to talk about all of them. And, well, there's a lot I haven't seen, so I can't be bothered talking about movies I haven't seen. So there we go.
Exactly.
And, yes, lovely ages will be revealed because we have to reveal what you were born to discuss the movies. So mine is 1984 and yours is 1987.
Correct.
Which would make me the older woman.
Huh. Yes. Hey, I love the older ladies.
Lame joke again. All right.
Sexy, more mature.
Oh, yes, me. Very sexy and mature. As hey, you can tell.
Oh, no question here, honey.
Ah, you're too kind. That's probably why you end up on the podcast.
So right. Far, I hope, I don't know if it's talent or, I don't know. I'm just here. I have fun.
Good. All right. Well, I'll go first. And
okay.
Because I will probably forget the films, I've got the Wikipedia page open, so I can just go down the list in alphabetical order. And funnily enough, there was a movie called 1984, released in 1984, and I haven't seen it, but I will see it because I've got it on my shelf of movies I need to watch.
Is that the one with Wells?
Yeah.
Orson? Yeah.
It was based on a book, and it stars John Hurt, and that's
about
all I know. I think it's the Big Brother thing, blah, 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 repressed society movie.
I've never seen it either, so.
Well, yeah, I'm curious to watch it. But the next movie on the list is one I don't really remember, but I know that you really like this movie. And that's 2010, the sequel to 2001.
I do love that movie. I think it's far superior to the original. Different movie, but very good.
And it, of course, stars one of your favorites, Helen Mirren.
Ooh, with this sexy Russian accent.
Ew.
Oh, she actually, I think she has a little bit of Russian ancestry in her family. So I think apparently it came pretty easy to her, but I think she hated doing it for some reason. I read in an interview or something like that. But ooh, yeah, she looked good back then.
Ew,
and she looks good now. She looked good at any point in her life.
Big Helen Mirren fan.
Always.
Actually curious to revisit this film, so Might have to do that.
I mean, I know a lot of people are going to argue with me that it's not nearly as good as the first.
Well, that's your opinion, and you're entitled to have it, so...
It has a story that first, you know, whatever.
Well, I know a lot of people that don't like 2001, and they think it's boring.
It is boring, I'm sorry.
There you go.
It was so ahead of its time, technically, but other than that, snore.
A lot of people will agree with you, I know that.
Okay.
All right. I'll move on a little bit, and then I'll pass it to you. Okay. I think the big film, as far as the award season goes, was Amadeus, which I actually went to rewatch recently, and I went like halfway through, and something came up, and I stopped watching it, and then I forgot to finish it.
Gotta love the Abraham. Yeah, it's kind of a hard movie to get through, to be honest with you.
It's very long, and I was watching like the director's cut.
Yeah.
But good movie.
It is a good one. I haven't seen it in years. I always meant to get the Blu-ray, but never got around to it.
If the transfer was done well, that would look really good on Blu-ray, I imagine. It would. Anyway. But this one was like the best picture at the Oscars that year, and best director, best actor. So did pretty well. And F. Murray Abraham is pretty fucking awesome in this movie. So I definitely think he deserved it.
Don't see enough of him lately.
Yeah, very true, very true. All right, I'm going to hand it over to you to mention a few movies from 87.
Okay, well, I won't jump to my favorites right away, but definitely the year of big action adventure flicks that, well, maybe not adventure, but thriller, horror, action type flicks. And one I definitely want to start with, came out about 2 months after I was born, is the classic Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon.
Oh, absolute favorite with Mel Gibson when he was still sane.
Was he ever sane? I'm not quite sure.
I don't know. The man is lost. I mean, I love him as an actor, but clearly the man doesn't have it together. But I love his character of Riggs. I love Danny Glover. The two had the greatest chemistry, and I saw that movie when I was pretty young, but for the year I was born, that one's definitely very high on my list, and it spawned some great sequels and great show.
Yeah, I think I like the first one the best.
Oh yeah, big time. Definitely. I mean, how can you beat Gary Busey, you know, putting a lighter to his arm to show that he can take pain and shit like that? And that was before he was messed up on everything else that he had done. And that was before Joe Pesci had shown up, so.
Oh, yeah, gotta love the Pesci.
Hey, fuck you at the drive-thru. Yeah. Yeah, that Joe Pesci.
Yeah.
But another one I'm going to mention, kind of a depressing classic drama, war flick, probably one of the best ever made other than Apocalypse Now, is the famous Full Metal Jacket.
Oh, that's my favorite.
It's that movie pretty much blows away all war films as far as I'm concerned, even Apocalypse Now, to be honest with you, that it gives you the full measure of what life was over there at that time. And Arlie Ermey, of course, is the drill sergeant, and it's just probably one of the most quotable movies of all time. Definitely a classic.
I could, maybe I won't go into all the specifics, but I often quote a lot of lines from Full Metal Jacket, and especially when I want to insult somebody.
Oh yeah, I'll bet you I could easily do the first 5 minutes. I've watched it so many times. Yeah. I consider it more of a comedy than anything else. I don't know. I'm kind of demented that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, so am I. I mean, I just piss myself at some of the shit that comes out of that guy's mouth. Fuck.
How tall are you, Private?
5'9", sir. No, sir, 5'9", sir.
I didn't know they stacked shit that high. Trying to squeeze an inch on me somewhere, huh?
Oh, yeah. Classic. Very classic movie.
But then it gets to the heartfelt,
It gets very depressing. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we get to the actual war itself.
Yeah. And that's where Stanley Cooper shines.
Indeed. Indeed. One of my favorites.
Yeah. And did you want to name one more for yourself, or do you want me to just keep going?
You can give us another one. Maybe we'll just do three at a time. That sounds good.
Okay, it sounds good. Another one that's also my fave was one that didn't make a hell of a lot of money, but is definitely a classic at this point, is the original, well, actually, excuse me, one of the original, The Untouchables.
The Untouchables.
From, Kevin Costner and Sean Connery Untouchables.
Yes, Brian De Palma.
Absolutely. Definitely one of my probably top three crime dramas of all time. Bobby De Niro is the famous Al Capone. He definitely blew me away that year. I can't deny that he wasn't perfect for that role.
He was indeed. I haven't seen that movie for a long time, but got lots of fun memories of that movie, however.
I mean, it's like Sean Connery, of course, took the cake in that, and Annie Garcia. Not my favorite Kevin Costner film, I'll be honest with you there, but I thought his character was, I don't know, I didn't think he played it very well, but the overall flick is just classic.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's fantastic. Very much a classic.
That's another one out of many to go.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the year I was born, it's got a lot of movies, and I think this was top of the box office for 84. I might just quickly check and make sure I'm right. I am right. Beverly Hills Cop, starring Eddie Murphy.
Axel Foley.
One I haven't seen in a long time, I must admit, but used to watch it quite a lot as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
It was just one of those, you know, Eddie Murphy, before he fucking lost the plot and played every single character in his movies and put on fat suits and did fart jokes all the time.
You know, that was pretty good up to a point. You know, and then, like, it just, I don't know if it was him or if it was his agent or whatever, just took it way too far, and it's like, okay, Eddie, stop.
Yeah, but I think this was the movie that really, I think this kind of skyrocketed Eddie Murphy
as far as films go, so,
yeah.
Without question. It is a classic. Definitely hilarious.
A good one.
Some of the funniest running gags of all time, the banana and the tailpipe, and, you know, all the, you know, great action scenes and fun story, fun characters. I mean, how can you argue when you've got, you know, Judge Reinhold and, you know, just awesome cast and awesome director, everything. It's just a classic.
It was pretty awesome. Definitely. Another movie I would like to mention, because of its sheer shitness, is Children of the Corn. And
a child shall eat them.
I mentioned this film because it is shit, but it's shit that I actually enjoy it for how terrible it actually is.
Yeah.
This movie has Linda Hamilton in it, and the dude, I can't remember his name, that plays Isaac is one creepy looking dude.
I think that, like, that entire, there's been like 20 Children of the Corns. And I think that kid, I can't even remember the kid who plays Isaac, but those, he's like in every single one of them.
I've only seen the first one and the sixth one. And the sixth one is called Isaac's Return, and he looks exactly the fucking same, even though it was made, like, 12 years later or something.
Jesus. I think, he looks like a little old man in that one.
Oh, man, he's fucking creepy as shit. And the other hilarious aspect of that film is Malachi.
He wants you to, Malachi.
Malachi. Oh, man.
I thought there were some scenes that were pretty cool in that show. It is pure garbage, but it is a fun flick. You gotta admit.
Well, it's so shit that it's pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
And exactly. That's why
the Blue Man and all that shit.
Yeah, that's why I have to mention it. I mean, it's just one of those, you know, guilty pleasure, stupid, shitty movies. I mean, I could have mentioned something like Blood Simple, but the fact is, like, I don't even remember that movie. And it was, you know, the debut for the Coen brothers, but I'd rather mention Children of the Corn because I remember that movie a bit better.
You know, I haven't seen it since I was a kid. Yeah. I don't think I even liked it back then, so I think I liked the ending. That was about it.
Children of the Corn is actually in my DVD collection. I'll add that.
Is it?
It is indeed. All right, next movie, and this is by my favorite director. It is Dune. And I know that a lot of people really hate Dune, but I don't. I really, I mean, I don't think it's one of his best movies, but I still do like the movie. And I don't, you know, for David Lynch, this was very difficult for him, and I don't think, you know, it did turn out the way he wanted it to, and there was a lot of stuff that happened. And yeah, Patrick Stewart, when I went to his one-man convention, told some interesting stories about how he got cast in Dune and his relationship with David Lynch. It was all very interesting.
And well, it is. And
it's a bit long to go into, but...
yeah, that, and I'll add just a bit to that. Like, Dune as a film for me as a kid was an absolute classic. I remember watching that when I was like freaking like 6 or 7 with my dad. And, you know, that's one of those movies where there's so much detail that had to be thrown in that every time you watch the movie, you learn something new, right? So Patrick Stewart was fantastic in that role. What a cast. I mean, you had Max von Sydow, you had just an unbelievable cast.
Well, and then he put Sting in it.
To find out that it didn't do that well.
Yeah. You had Sting, and I think it was the first or... one of the first movies for Kyle MacLachlan, who...
it was, yeah. He was very young in that.
Very young, very cute in that movie.
And the very steamy, you know, ripped Sting.
Sting, yes.
Coming out of the steam shower or whatever the hell that was.
And interesting to hear from Patrick Stewart when I actually went to meet him. And we were talking about him... and, like, how he discussed the movie, and I was talking about the movie with him, and he said that he absolutely adores the movie.
He does, so yeah.
It's nice to hear him say that, and I was just like, oh, Patrick, you're the greatest.
That man is a god amongst men. Like, he could just... he's one of those actors, he's like Sam Elliott, who could just sit there, read out of a phone book, and just be awesome.
It's just his presence and his... the way he talks is just, we were sitting watching his Q&A and he could have been talking about fucking how to scrub a toilet and it would have been mesmerizing. That's just the way he is.
And you take the brush.
And, you know, he's just, he's the man, Patrick Stewart.
He is. And and the funny thing is, he's actually not a science fiction fan.
Yet what is he known for? Sci-fi.
What is he known for? That's exactly the whole thing. He's always been a, you know, classic theater trained actor, and he was never a huge sci-fi fan, yet the character of Gurney from Dune drew him in so much, and it was so, you know, very respectful character, and nobody could have played it better.
Yeah, he is a true legend. And with that, it's back to you.
Back to me.
Back to you.
Well, I've got way too many to go through, but sticking with, let's go to a shit fest of a movie, even though it's a classic.
Shit fest. Much like Children of the Corn.
Yeah, pretty much. The there's one in particular that we've definitely mentioned before on previous podcasts, and that is Dolph Lundgren's famous Masters of the Universe.
Oh, Masters of the Universe.
Frank Langella, Courtney Cox. Absolutely horrific movie.
This is a what the fuck were you thinking movie.
Yeah, but it really is. And there are so many like it, even in 1987 and even today. And Masters of the Universe definitely ranks up there as one of the worst. But for some goddamn reason, I just can't help but pop in, you know, a copy every now and again just for a good laugh.
This is one of those classically... so bad, it's good. What movies?
It's just the Dolph Lundgren. It's just.
Oh my god.
A man will never, ever. The Expendables may just be one of the first movies in like a decade that is respectful that he's done.
Have you seen, even though he's in it for not very long, Universal Soldier Regeneration?
No, and I've been told to see it.
Well, for a small role, I think it makes up for it, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, he has a really... I think his fight scene with Van Damme is actually better than in the original film.
That's saying a lot.
Yeah, I mean, fuck, man, that movie was, like, made for Marcy.
I still can't believe that movie was made by Roland Emmerich, the original.
The original, I know.
I forget that all the time. I remember watching the credits like a couple of years ago, watching
it.
I'm like,
yeah, rewatching it. I'm like,
you shit me.
Roland Emmerich did this.
Roland Emmerich.
You know, I'm like, yeah, his best movies are Universal Soldier and Stargate.
Oh, I love Stargate.
But Stargate's for another podcast, because, you know, maybe I'll just be...
That's for the Kurt Russell podcast.
That's for, oh, it's Kurt Russell. Yeah.
And for me, oh, it's James Spader.
That'll be an interesting podcast. There's
no hot chicks in that movie. It really sucks. Well, except for the girl that Spader's character is banging. She's pretty cute, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, nothing.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on from Masters, I'm going to have to go with, I'm going to journey into horror a little bit here.
Ew.
Go to another classic, not too very well known, sadly, in the horror community, especially the new generation, and that's the classic vampire flick, Near Dark.
I just had an orgasm. That was the weirdest orgasm I've ever had.
Gets you an orgasm, Marcy. What's going on here?
Well, no. Yeah, you know that Near Dark is my favorite vampire movie.
I know, it is a classic.
It's an awesome movie.
It's about as raunchy, it's pure vampirism at its best. And
yeah.
Out of, you know, I don't care what you say about Catherine Bigelow, who directed it, I still think that's her best film. Like, her locker doesn't even touch it. I know they're completely different films, but in terms of characters and storyline and just an overall fantastic flick, Near Dark takes the cake.
It is. It is one of my favorites ever, and it's just, it's so good.
Just watching Bill Paxton, tear ass through that bar, and, you know, Lance Henriksen sitting in the corner smiling, and you know he's just an evil son of a bitch. And and then the love story, it's just absolutely awesome.
Yeah, it's one of the rare ones where you've actually got the chick vampire that leads in the dude, because it's always the dude vampire gets the girl or some other crap.
Seducing the girl, yeah, exactly.
I mean, what's the name? Underworld was another one where we actually had the chick vampire, but there was way more story and stuff in that movie as well, like, you know, because they had werewolves and stuff, but...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Kate Beckinsale and PBC, that's all I need to know.
Oh, yeah.
That's really all I need to know for that movie. But, Near Dark is definitely a top favorite of mine. Mm. And then I'm going to go to another absolutely famous horror slash comedy, I guess you want to call it, since it's definitely funnier than its predecessor. And that is the classic Evil Dead 2.
Ooh, I love Evil Dead 2.
I don't think there's a horror movie in the world. Like, I'm sure there's ones out there, but that I've seen, probably I'm going to have to say it's the funniest horror comedy of all time.
Well, I would argue with you and say Reanimator is, but that's my favorite horror movie ever. You know what?
That is very true, but I haven't seen that in years. So
you need to see it again.
I need to refresh on that one, that's for sure.
Mm.
Now, would you say for unintentional comedy or for, like, scripted comedy?
Oh, that movie was meant to be hilarious in a very dark way.
Yeah, like in Evil Dead 2, like when he stomps on that one demon's head and the eyeball comes flying out.
Oh my god, it goes in the mouth.
You can see the wire coming across the screen.
Oh, it's classic. And the whole, the fight scene with his hand.
Oh, everything.
Oh, my God.
And but it was also, I mean, it's kind of a weird situation, that movie, like, because it was supposed to be almost a remake of the original, yet it's not. It's got all the funny new gags. It's definitely had more of a budget than the first one.
Oh, yeah.
And Bruce Campbell, I mean, fuck, it's the chin. Yeah. How can you argue with the chin?
Yeah, exactly. It's very, very, so that very definitely, awesome.
Definitely ranks up high with me for that year.
Yeah. You want to hear my next movie for 1984?
Go for it.
I'm hoping the music plays.
Oh, good God.
I think that's all I need to play because you know exactly what it is.
The bacon is coming.
Footloose. Yeah, Footloose. This is this is one of my all-time favorite, like, guilty pleasure movies. I love Kevin Bacon. Absolutely love him.
I just love watching Chris Penn trying to dance, to be honest.
Oh my
with
god,
you.
Chris Penn was actually skinny in this movie, and I remember rewatching it after so many years with my mum, and we're sitting there and we're going, what, you know, his friend looks really familiar. Like, what actor's playing him? And then we go, oh my god, it's Chris Penn.
You're under arrest, sugar.
And it's like, holy yep. shit, what the fuck? He was skinny, he was dancing, what the hell happened?
Oh, rest in peace, Chris.
You oh, I love you, Chris. And, yeah, horse, well, I should really say she's a horse face, but Sarah Jessica Parker is in this as well.
I almost forget that every time.
Yeah.
She's and then the world the... famous bald mastermind, John Lithgow.
John Lithgow is the irreverent
of the town,
and he's against the music and the dancing. They're not allowed to do it.
And until they realize, oh, it's in the Bible.
Mm.
But, yeah, you know, isn't everything just happens to pop up in the Bible?
Yeah, but then, you know, he comes around at the end, as they always do.
Yeah, because he's getting horny dancing with his wife, yeah.
And his wife is played by...
Yes, you're dancing.
Who played the wife? Diane Wiest plays the wife.
Yeah,
the
that's
mom
right.
of the girlfriend of Kevin Bacon.
Oh, Jesus. I'll tell you what, though, that, like, one of my favorite scenes will always be Kevin in the abandoned factory.
Oh, my God. That is, like, a classic. That is a classic. Oh,
there have been times where I wanted to do that, but oh, yeah. I can't. There's no abandoned warehouses around here. So.
Yeah, and his dancing is legendary. If you know
He's
what I mean.
He's actually a really talented actor.
Oh, I love Kevin Bacon.
When he chooses to be.
I love him. Oh, Kevin. Anyway, I've got two very, well, they're well-known classics now. The first one I'm going to mention is Ghostbusters.
Oh, and, I love that movie.
Unfortunately, I don't have the theme song on my Mac, otherwise I would have played that intro the movie.
I wish I'd had some leeway there. I could have queued it up for you.
Actually,
if you just give me a second, no. Let my hard drive power up here. Mm. What the hell? But no, Ghostbusters
movie.
Is pretty much the epitome of it's comedy gold.
No, it is. This movie's just legendary. I've got a poster on my wall for Ghostbusters, and I did meet one of the stars of Ghostbusters, Ernie Hudson, and I always bring it up because he gave me a hug because I'm so sweet. And he was wearing his Ghostbusters shirt at the time.
Was he?
Indeed, he was. Good man.
He was definitely one of the funniest of that show, and I hope if they do another one, if they make it, if Bill Murray stops being a dickhead, that Ernie has a part in it. Actually, I think that was one of the guidelines, or like one of the things that was going to get Bill Murray to actually do the movie, as long as they write in a part for Ernie.
Mm.
And
indeed.
Then he'll do it.
Yeah, he was great.
So I guess he's not that much of a douche.
He was great. Ernie. Definitely.
Just a puff marshmallow man.
But, yeah, Ghostbusters, I mean, what can you say about it? It's just, it's a classic of,
Oh, you could dedicate an hour just to that.
You know, my favorite part is, when they get slimed.
Which part?
You know, when they come out and they got all that goo on them and what's his line? We got slimed or something.
Actual physical contact. I feel so funky.
Oh, it's classic.
He got slimed. That's great, Ray. Save me a sample. Absolutely classic dialogue and brilliant directing. Ivan Reitman, who was completely responsible for that. There's a guy who really needs to get back on the wagon again if he can stop producing. But that's Ghostbusters without question. It actually makes me jealous wishing I was born in 84 so I could talk about it.
Nah, I get the Ghostbusters.
And, you deserve.
Yeah, and another one, which I quite liked as a child, was Gremlins.
Gremlins, woo!
And I haven't seen it for a long time, but I remember the Gremlins as a kid. They were just so gross.
And
ew. It's like, well,
they're so fun.
You know, the what's it called when it looks normal? Well, not normal, but he's all cute, Gizmo or whatever.
Yeah, Gizmo.
And it's like, oh, I want one of those, but yeah, better not break the rule there.
Do not feed it. No, that movie was way ahead of its time too, in terms of like things like that.
It was good stuff. I really want to rewatch it again.
I'd give any. I friggin' crossing my fingers that they do like a re-release transfer for Blu-ray. But I don't know if that'll ever come, because I have a feeling that the Blu-ray will make like the effects
just look
more
shit.
Obvious. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, that's another piece of comedy gold.
Oh, it's awesome.
Between the movie theater and the bar and the freaking the flashing gremlin and freaking just absolutely hysterical.
They were a fucking nightmare. Those damn gremlins. Damn them.
Beer and cigarettes and women and oh my god.
Oh, I know.
They loved it all.
Indeed. All right. I'll be shooting it back your way.
Okay.
Because that's definitely three. Footloose, Ghostbusters, Gremlins. That is three.
A recap. And, okay, I shall move on to a few more favorites. Do you want to do one more set of three or just keep on going?
Well, I've still got quite a few to get through, so let's keep going.
Yeah, chop, same chop. Here. So another one that's, yeah, there's way too many for each year. The 80s were a fun time.
Oh, they were.
And another one I'm going to go with, one of my all-time favorites, is the famous RoboCop.
I think Peter I just Weller. Had another orgasm.
Absolutely, without question, one of the greatest action films of all time, and one of the most violent.
Yes, watch it uncut.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can't. That was actually, I remember that movie. I don't remember personally coming out, but I remember my dad telling me that year that the ratings board was just not going to let it pass.
Yeah.
It was so bad, between the guy who gets melted by the acid and, you know, it's just absolutely
the scene where movie. They, you know, shoot the shit out of Peter Weller.
Out of Weller. Just fucking blowing his limbs off. It's definitely nightmare inducing, though.
Oh, yeah.
But that's why we love Paul Verhoeven, and yes. We wish him all the best in his endeavors, and really hope that he gets back in front of a camera one day. And behind.
Well, I really hope he would do a showgirls commentary, but yeah, it's probably never going to happen.
Yeah, I can imagine what that commentary would be. It'd be like a combination of fuck you, and this movie's great, and I won't apologize for this, and blah, blah, blah.
Well, if he was to do a commentary, I'm always happy to sit with him and do the commentary, being, you know, the fan that I am of that movie.
He'll say that this movie is how you don't make a Las Vegas stripper movie. That's how I contributed.
Although I will say that the commentary for RoboCop is awesome, and yes. I do enjoy listening to that man talk about RoboCop being the American Jesus.
American Jesus.
The American Jesus.
I love
Jesus.
His accent, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love RoboCop. But, this is my bedtime movie. When I can't sleep, there's like a handful of movies I always can put on, and I'll eventually fall asleep later, but I enjoy watching them at night, and RoboCop is one of the bedtime movies.
Oh, he's the hero, and that movie was another one. I actually think that was inspired by Judge Dredd, if I'm not mistaken, the original comic books. But it also had the benefit of one of the most badass villains of all time, Kurtwood Smith as Clarence Boddicker.
Oh man, how evil is he?
Bitches leave. Dude. But he's just badass from start to finish. And the funny thing is, though, like I saw RoboCop like after movies. Like some of his nicer sweet roles and that 70s show and stuff like that. So oh my god,
you're like, holy shit.
That is a badass.
You're like, holy shit. I remember RoboCop was one of those movies when I was a kid that, oh my god, you're not allowed to watch this, but you know, totally, when the parents weren't around, we were totally watching RoboCop.
Yeah. Well, like, do you seriously think that the director told him to, you know, dip his fingers into that glass of wine and sniff it like it's Coke? You know, like, there's no way. Like, that's an unbelievable acting task for him. And then there's Peter Weller, who is amazing as RoboCop.
Yeah, and he did everything. Like, he's in the suit and everything.
He is. It's all him. Just plays the part brilliantly. I mean, he's not the greatest actor in the world, but the role was kind of perfect for his likeness and his acting. And no, it's RoboCop's definitely one I could watch 50 years from now, and it'd still be as classic as it is today.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very fucking awesome movie.
All right, and then I move on. So RoboCop first. Next one, the classic comedy Spaceballs.
Spaceballs, Dark Helmet.
The master, the king.
Oh, nothing beats this movie. Delivered
more laughs than anyone.
Nothing beats this movie, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I always have a hard time deciding if it's my favorite Mel Brooks comedy. I don't think it is. But, I mean, History of the World and all that, it's so hard to compare. But Rick Moranis and Bill Pullman and everything. All these. Jesus Christ. It's just...
Oh, man. Lone Star and Barf. Oh.
Everybody.
Princess Vespa.
It's Pizza not for everybody, Heart. That movie, but...
Oh, dude, it's fucking so funny. It was on TV, I think it was a couple of months ago, because this was before I had surgery.
Yep.
And, yeah, just watching it again, it's like, fuck, this is a classic.
You fell for the oldest trick in the book. But, too many classic lines. So, yeah, Spaceballs is definitely another absolute favorite. And then moving on, another one I didn't see till a lot later in my life, but is also a favorite from the year I was born, was Wall Street.
Ooh, Wall Street.
Which is seeing a sequel in the next few months.
Yeah, which has been delayed and delayed and delayed.
Yeah, I don't really understand why. I guess it's probable, like, you know, they probably decide we're going to make more money in the fall, so we will see. But in general, I mean, Wall Street, you'll either love it or hate it. You could either be, you know, so bored by the story, or, you know, if you have a general interest in stocks and insider trading, all how all that shit works, it's pretty awesome. But Michael Douglas just rules that movie.
Top form, Gordon Gekko.
Gordon Gekko is definitely one of my favorite characters of that era. He was definitely the kind of person you looked up to, yet you despised at the same time.
Mm.
And it looks like he's definitely put the same suit back on for the sequel.
Yeah.
But and, Charlie Sheen was Charlie great. Sheen.
And his dad played his dad. I said Charlie Sheen, and then his dad played his dad in the movie.
Yep. Martin Sheen, yep. Mm. Played his dad for the Blue Star Airlines. And Daryl Hannah was absolutely horrible in the movie, but... But I don't know if she won the Razzie. I know she was nominated, but she apparently her and Oliver Stone didn't get along, though, so that kind of explains it.
Oh, yeah.
But John C. McGinley and Hal Holbrook, and just awesome movie, a lot of fun. And not for everybody, but definitely one of my faves.
It's I haven't seen it for a little while, but it's what I want to revisit before going to see the sequel, obviously.
Yeah, I guess it. You probably don't even need to see it, but yeah, it's kind of a probably going to be required viewing at some point.
But it's good that it's actually a sequel that has, you know, the same director.
Yeah,
at least that everybody's, part. Hopefully, it'll be good.
Everybody's back. Yeah, and at some point, I even keep hearing rumors that Charlie Sheen is in the sequel, but I don't even know if that's true or not.
Yeah, I can't imagine he would be.
No.
So yeah,
it'd be an interesting cameo, though.
It would be.
Yeah. Okay, and so that's two, and the next one I also wanted to go over is a classic John Hughes comedy, and that was the famous Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, I haven't seen that for a long time.
No?
No.
That, I actually watched that the night after John passed away, tragically, and that is... one of his most brilliantly written films. Like, he did that in a weekend. He wrote that in a weekend.
True. pretty
and,
impressive.
And, you know, so much praise. And Steve Martin and John Candy, it had such great chemistry in that flick. It was just all around an amazing comedy film with a lot of heart. And definitely for that year, I saw that when I was a young kid, it, you know, regardless of all the swearing and everything else. But no, that's definitely one of my all-time favorites from that year as well.
Yeah, it's John Candy was such an awesome, you know, actor, comedian. And it's a shame he, you know, passed quite early in his life.
Too early. He was... you know, like many comedians, you know, with, you know, that kind of weight issue and the, I mean, he wasn't into the drugs or anything like Farley or Belushi, but yeah, he was definitely taken way too early in his career and in his life.
Yeah, I mean, he was, what, 43, died of a heart attack.
Oh, yeah. Very tragic. 43, it's nothing.
Yeah, I remember when he died, I was very sad.
Yeah, we all definitely were. He, definitely an acting legend.
All right, so we're passing it back to moi.
Yep. Yes.
All right. This was this movie was the second in a series of films, and it would be Indiana Jones at the Temple of Doom.
Short round.
Now,
I love the second.
A lot of people either really just love this movie, yeah, it's all right, or they really hate it, and they really hate it because of Short Round and just the weird direction that it takes, but I always enjoyed the film. It wasn't one of my favorite Indiana Jones film, but it does it beats the shit out of the latest one, which I won't mention by name because it can fuck off for now. Not a fan, obviously. But yeah, The Temple of Doom, quite a weird film. It is, and yeah, the stuff where we get into it later where there's like the weird sacrifices and I don't know, doesn't he rip the heart, the beating heart out of his chest?
He performs the Kalima.
Kalima, that's it.
Shakti Day.
And I would definitely say that was the inspiration for Sub-Zero's finishing move in Mortal Kombat. That's Scorpion.
Yeah, it was definitely a classic. You know what? And I'm not even going to go into the latest film because I loved it. I don't care that anybody else doesn't like it. I think it. You know, there are a few corny scenes. All three movies had corny scenes. You know,
they do. There's no argument there.
It's the people who come out and say that the realism of the fourth movie is the issue, because that's just a stupid statement. You're not a fan of the original movies if that's what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, these movies are so realistic.
Oh, absolutely. Rip the heart out of a guy's, you know, chest and he's still alive and breathing.
Well, yeah, that's about as believable as surviving the explosion in a fridge.
Yeah, exactly. But... or, you know, flying out of, you know, jumping out of an airplane in a rubber raft and landing. Like you just jumped off a trampoline.
I really just didn't like the movie. That's
I don't know.
Just the way it was for me.
I mean, there were some, you know, swinging on branches with the monkeys, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. Kate Blanchett's hot. What can I say?
Oh, yeah. No argument there. She looked good.
She could kick my ass in that movie any day. But, no, I thought Temple of Doom was a lot of fun. I mean, you know, Willie Scott definitely pushed my buttons at a few points in the movie.
Kate Capshaw is not a good actress, and
no, she's
Willie
not. But
was
she was
very
banging
annoying.
Steven at the time, so
well, they're married, so
what can I say? You know. I mean, a lot of people blame that movie on the fact that George Lucas was going through his divorce at that point, so the story suffered heavily because of it. But I'm one of those people who loved Short Round. I thought he was.
I honestly didn't mind Short Round, to be perfectly honest.
It was a riot right from the get-go, you know? He knew Indiana in and out, and Indy knew him. You know?
And,
but then I love the story of the village and the desperation, the children and all
that. My favorite scene is when they're, like, having that dinner with the, I don't know, was he the king or whatever? And he's, like, this little
kid,
and they serve the snakes and the bugs, and it's the monkey brains or whatever the fuck it was, I can't remember. The eyeball soup. That's right.
Yeah, like soup.
Yeah, oh, bleh. That's so gross.
Monkey brains.
So gross. But a lot of fun anyway.
No, it was definitely a lot of fun. I One thing I'll always love, it took kind of a James Bond twist at the beginning with him in the white tuxedo, which Harrison definitely wore it well. And I thought it was definitely the goofier of all the films.
Yeah.
You know, it was having fun. There was nothing really serious about it until, you know, it shows the kids being tortured in the mines and all that. But Indiana saves the fucking day there. That's for sure.
Yeah. And, back when I was a kid, I had the biggest crush on Indiana Jones. And I also had a very big crush on Han Solo because I used to watch Star Wars and Indiana Jones like every weekend. So, yeah, those movies, you know, well, at least the original three Indiana Jones movies hold a special place in my heart.
I'll tell you what, Marion Ravenwood from Raiders will always, you know, she'll always have my heart, that's for sure.
All right.
Yeah. Of all the Indiana Jones girls. Yeah,
she was pretty cool.
Princess Leia, and of course. But, yep, definitely another fave.
All right, next film, and this is one of my all-time favorite movies ever. And again, this is like a childhood movie that I watched all the time.
Yep.
That would be The Karate Kid.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I love being born then this year, because I've got The Karate Kid. Oh, just this movie is fucking classic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is like one of the ultimate, well, you know, coming of age movies. It's a cute, you know, it has a cute relationship with, you know, Mr. Miyagi and Daniel-san, because, you know, he's the out of towner. He doesn't get along with anybody, and then he gets this relationship with the old man who teaches him the ways of the world. He teaches him karate and what it really means, and he can overcome the bullies at school.
Yeah.
Come on, it's the ultimate, like, you know.
Step up and,
It's you know, finding yourself, overcoming the odds, mm-hmm. and it has, like, one of the best ever asshole bad guys with Martin Cove as John Kreese.
Oh, yeah, I remember they said that Chuck Norris actually turned that role down because it was like a negative stereotype issue.
Yeah.
But I don't even know if that was true or not. But
well, I could see that with Chuck Norris.
Oh, Chuck Norris is the hero. He'll always be the hero.
Yeah, so he wouldn't want to be the bad guy.
No, like, why would like, there's you no know, reason to be the bad guy.
What's his name? Johnny Lawrence, the main bully, is such a dickhead. Like, you want to kick his ass.
And Frame a very young Elizabeth Shue.
Yeah, she's very cute in this movie.
She's cute in everything. But, no, that is the epitome of classic 80s kids movie. Like, like around, like, kind of like the underdog, like, Rocky type movie.
Yeah, well, you know, it was directed by the same person who directed Rocky.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. So you can see these John G.
That's right.
Yeah. And Pat Morita is the absolute best as Mr. Miyagi.
Pat, like, if there ever was a legendary character, no question. He's the man.
He's awesome. And I can't bring myself to watch this crappy remake that's called The Karate Kid, despite the fact it's in China where they do kung fu.
Not karate.
Oh, how stupid are they? Fucking.
I'll see it for Jackie.
Well, yeah, that's the only reason I would actually want to see it, because I've heard that he's quite good in it. But as everybody knows, I can't stand Jaden Smith.
Yeah.
I just find him so annoying.
I'm with you there.
All the trailers and scenes I've seen, I just want to punch him in the head. And that's just really wrong to want to punch like a 30-year-old boy in the head. Well, with
you and I, it's actually, I think it was that, you know, Day the Earth Stood Still that ruined.
Yeah, it really did. But when I see him sitting down and talking about the movie, I'm just like, oh my God, I really can't stand you.
Yeah.
But, you know, I understand they kept the name The Karate Kid, obviously, to get the audiences, but it has nothing to do with karate. They're doing kung fu.
Yeah.
Go fuck yourselves, assholes.
But your average, young generation kid isn't going to know that.
They're not going to know that, no.
Yeah.
Smart people like us know that.
Yeah. So we'll all stick together and I think we'll be okay.
Yeah.
I heard Will Smith actually had to beg the studio to give like Jaden that part.
Oh, God. So,
the only reason he'll achieve any fame is because of Dad. Sorry, that's the way it is.
Indeed. And, okay, for my third one for this round, I'm going to mention The Last Starfighter, which I mentioned briefly just in our quick pre-show.
And haven't seen it ever.
The reason I do want to bring it up is because this was one of the very first movies to have a lot of CGI in it. And okay. It was kind of like a groundbreaking thing, I believe, at the time. It's actually an interesting movie. It's a sci-fi adventure movie, and it's about a kid. I think they're living out of the way, and there's a game, The Last Starfighter, and they play the game, and he totally, like, dominates the game. And the game is actually done by the aliens, and they're trying to find someone who can help them, which is sounds kind of weird, but that's what happens. I'm trying to sort of, you know, explain it. Yeah, but yeah, the boy then goes with the aliens and he learns to be a pilot on spaceships and help them out and stuff. It's all just, it's a fun movie.
I've heard it's a lot of fun. It's definitely one I gotta add to
it's not the greatest, but it is interesting. And I mean, the effects now look really silly, but for the time, you can see that there, you know, that was definitely groundbreaking stuff. And it is an 80s classic. And I'm pretty sure this has actually gone out to Blu-ray, I think, in a special anniversary edition, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
I'm pretty sure. I think it is, but I'm not. Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that.
But yeah, it's interesting. It's, again, it's not the best movie, but it's like one of those fun, just, you know, it's one of those things that if you're a kid, if you're a kid and you watched it, you'd totally be like, oh my God, I want to be a starfighter and just like totally pilot the spacecrafts. But yeah, that's The Last Starfighter, and it's back to you.
Alrighty, so for the next round, I'm going to name a movie that I don't know if you might have seen it. It's definitely a movie that was very important to me as a very young child, and that is a small little family science fiction film called Batteries Not Included.
I haven't seen that for a long time. I used to love that as a kid.
That was my absolute pinnacle. I watched that movie over and over and over again when I was a kid. And to anybody who's never quite seen it, Steven Spielberg actually produced it, and it's supposed to be a TV series, but he made it into a film. It's about these little living machines. They're like little flying saucers from outer space that, for some reason, I mean, the story seems a little silly, but it's so heartbreaking. These little machines come in, and they've kind of populated around a very old building that this corporation wants to knock down and build a plaza, right? And these little machines come down and fix things. That's their purpose. They fix objects. They fix, you know, entire floors and things like that. They're just a little fixing race. And they come to help these people who live in this building and don't want to see it destroyed, and that it's their home. And it's just such a heartfelt movie. It had the cast of Jessica Tandy, who is famous from Cocoon. It was the elder couple, and yep. Just an unbelievable cast of relatively unknown people, but it's definitely one of my absolute favorites as a kid. And you know, some of them, the machines get hurt at one point. It just breaks your heart. And Brad Bird actually wrote it. I remember reading about that recently. He did The Incredibles, and now he's doing the next Mission Impossible movie, and just brilliant flick.
Yeah, as we bring up these movies, like, oh shit, that's another one I've got to like watch again, because it was like one of those childhood films that I used to watch. And I think I used to get upset at certain things in that movie.
It is very upsetting, and I haven't seen it in years because I only had it on VHS.
Yeah, well, it is on DVD. Well, at least it's on DVD here.
Is it?
Yeah, I did see it.
I've never looked for it.
Hmm.
and I don't know why. I got to get out there and find it.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, that's my another first choice. I'm definitely going to mention. Mm-hmm. And moving on to next one is moving back into horror. Ooh. Is the first original Hellraiser.
Hellraiser.
That is by far one of the most fucked up movies I've ever seen in my life.
Yes.
Clive Barker is a disgusting human being, but he's awesome and talented.
Well, he has a weird mind.
He does. And there's no question of that. And Hellraiser is his undisputed masterpiece. He's done a lot over the years, but Hellraiser always takes the cake. But I remember seeing that as a kid, and I was actually, I think, a little too young to be watching that. And, you know, solving the puzzle box, and, you know,
that puzzle box was fucked.
Ugh. Yeah. I didn't even want to solve a Rubik's Cube after I saw that movie.
Yeah.
But, just the Cenobites and just...
Oh my God, Pinhead scares the shit out of me. Just the look of Pinhead, like, fucking freaks me out.
Oh, and the Chatterer and the... just unbelievable characters, but it was also a great story and very inventive for the time. And many have tried to copy the idea, but they all fail in the end. The original Hellraiser, and even Hellraiser 2, is definitely classic horror cinema, if you like gore anyway.
Well, yeah, definitely. It was quite gory.
For sure. Gory. That's another favorite. Mm. Yeah, and then... one I'm going to go to that, funny enough, has a unofficial sequel coming out this weekend, is my all-time favorite movie ever of 1987, and that is Arnold Schwarzenegger's Predator.
Predator! You are one ugly motherfucker.
Motherfucker.
That was a bad Arnold, Marcy.
That. Start doing my Billy impersonations, they're even worse. Shooting in all directions. But Predator, I remember seeing that as a really young kid, and it just fucking thrilled me. I remember sitting that down with my dad. I was like, this fucking movie rules.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This movie does fucking rule. Yeah, it is.
And it was Arnie at his best.
Yeah
it was. Everybody, Carl Weathers, Bill Duke, you know, everybody. It was just fucking awesome. And, of course, Jesse Ventura. I can't forget him.
Yeah, there's a bit of a governor thing going on in that movie, I'd say.
Oh, there definitely is. There definitely is. Those two were always in competition, you know, on the set. Who has bigger arms and shit like that? I mean, Jesse was a fucking monster back then. Those were his wrestling days.
That's why they called him the Body.
Exactly. And, I really, really hope, and from what I've been hearing, Predators, the new one, is fantastic and definitely a very good ode to the original. But the Predator itself was so inventive. Stan Winston, RIP, buddy, you are a god for coming up with such an amazing concept, and it definitely outlives any other, well, other than Aliens, of course. Mm. The classic H.R. Giger, but Predator, without question, one of my favorite action horror films of all time.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? Is that the Predator was going to be played by Van Damme.
Oh, I remember that rumor.
Yeah, but apparently the suit didn't work and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, that's that. At one point, I remember seeing the test footage. They had like this red creature. It was just like a red suit or something. Yeah. It looked stupid.
Yeah, it didn't look right.
So Stan Winston one day on, you know, he's working on Aliens, and you know he's on a plane with James Cameron, and he drew it out, and he's like, well, "What do you think, Jim?"
Mm.
And Jim's only input was, "That's really cool, but why don't you give him mandibles on his mouth?" And those two together gave birth to the Predator. And ever since, it's had its on and offs with some shitty movies. But all in all, the original Predator will always be infamous.
Indeed. Indeed.
Another favorite.
Indeed. Love Predator.
And back to you.
Back to me. All right. Another childhood classic. that if I watch it, you know, like not if I watch it, but anytime I watch it, there is the scene that I will still cry when I watch it. And that is the Never-Ending Story.
I haven't seen it in years.
Yeah, this movie just, I used to watch it when I was a kid and I loved it so much. And everything about it is just so beautiful. And it's just, I love it. I just, you know, Falcor, the luck dragon, he's so cool.
Right.
And, you know, you follow the adventures of Atreyu, the warrior. And he's got his horse, and when the horse goes to the I think it was the Swamp of Sadness, the horse sinks into the mud, and I always cry, and I'm almost going to cry just talking about it. It's just such a very sad and emotional scene.
Oh, yeah.
This movie is just like, you know, the kid, he gets picked on by bullies. And he finds the book, The Neverending Story, and he starts reading it. And he sort of goes into this adventure, into the story, and it goes between the kid reading the book and in the world of Fantasia. And then at the end, at the end, everything comes together nicely.
Nice.
And it's so beautiful, and I fucking just love this movie.
It's one I haven't seen since I was a young kid, and I don't remember it that well, but it's one I definitely gotta revisit sometime soon.
Oh, if I watch it again, I'm just gonna bawl my eyes out over the scene that I just mentioned. And yes, thank you, Wolfgang Peterson. Good movie.
Genius director.
And the next movie I'm going to mention is a horror movie, and it's probably one of the biggest classics around. And funnily enough, its remake came out this year, and that would be A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Classic cinema.
I love A Nightmare on Elm Street. Absolutely love it. It's
very few horror films scare me. That movie still does.
Oh, well, that movie doesn't scare me, but I love Freddy, and I love just the originality of it, and just something was different, because the boogeyman in the movie gets you in your dreams, and it's a bit hard to kind of run away from someone in your sleep. So,
well, that's what kind of freaks me out. It's the lack of control. It's the fact that you can't get away from him because everyone has to sleep.
Indeed. And of course, this movie gave us Johnny Depp.
Oh yeah, it did.
Everyone remembers. First role. And like watching Never Sleep Again, the documentary about the franchise, Wes Craven talking about the ideas, where the ideas for the movie came from, are actually really creepy, because it was based on true stories that he read in the paper about a kid that refused to go to sleep because he was going to die, and then when he eventually fell asleep, he died. That itself I find more creepy, because it was real than the actual film. So
did they say why, though?
No, they didn't work out why he died. And they found, like, a coffee machine and, like, stay-awake pills in his room, because he just did not want to go to sleep. So
might be a little mentally ill there.
Yeah, well, a lot of that obviously found its way into the movie, because she drinks a lot of coffee. But one of the best, like, classic 80s horror movies.
Yeah, it's definitely one that
Robert Englund just fucking rules.
It's survived the test of time.
Yeah, Robert Englund rules as Freddy. Definitely. Very awesome.
Robert Englund rules as Robert Englund.
Yeah, I mean, I rewatched V, the original miniseries from 1983, and he's in that, and even in his small role, he rules.
Exactly. It's like that movie, I can't remember which Arnold Schwarzenegger movie it was one of his very, very early ones, an official movie, Dennis Quaid was in it, and Englund is the one who oils up Arnie before his competitions. I shit you not, if you go on like YouTube and you type in Robert Englund, Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, there's a walking scene of Dennis and, you know, Arnie walking down a hallway at a convention center to, for the ultimate, you know, man in the universe contest. And there's a very young Robert Englund rubbing oil.
I will go watch that video.
It's hysterical, but yeah, he definitely created probably one of the most, if not the most iconic horror villain of all time. Mm. Even more than Jason, even more than Myers.
Yeah.
Without.
Yeah. The next movie I want to talk about is possibly in its, I think, uncut version, it's probably one of the bloody longest movies ever, but it's also one of the most epic and fantastic movies ever, in my opinion. It's Once Upon a Time in America, starring Robert De Niro and James Woods.
Unbelievable film.
It really, really is. And this is obviously it's a crime film about some Jewish fellas. And, you know, it's about from the early days when they're childhood friends and goes through as they become, you know, mobsters and everything.
Always wanted to be a gangster.
Yeah, but this movie took me, like, on my first viewing, it took me, like, 3 weeks to watch. And we had, like, I don't know, 3 VHS tapes because we watched it on video back in the day.
Yeah.
Because my dad was like, oh, we have to watch this movie. This is, like, one of the best movies ever. And, you know, we went to the video store. It was, like, 3 tapes to get through. But, oh, my God.
Please insert the next tape.
It's just a phenomenal movie. It really is. And I haven't seen it for a while, but it's just, because of how long it is, it's not one you can watch all the time, but it's definitely worth at least a couple of viewings. And again, Robert De Niro just owns. And one of James Woods' best roles, easily.
James Woods, he's a talented fucker. He needs to do more.
Given roles like this, like, the man owns, he really does.
He does.
It's just,
anything he does.
It's just, it's a very epic film. Like, there's no other way to explain it. It's just, it's epic. And, yeah, I don't think there's anything, nothing quite like it out there. Really.
Definitely a crime drama film. Classic, no question of that.
Yeah, it is a phenomenal film. And, yeah, there's a lot of edits, but I'd say just get the longest version because it's the most complete and fantastic version of it.
I say that for pretty much any movie. If it has an uncut or unedited, just go for that.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's that was my next three, so it's back to you.
Alrighty. Continuing on, I'm going to return to Arnold. He had 2 films in 87. Another classic, even though it was a little shittier than Predators. Predator. But it's still one of my favorites, is The Running Man.
And the best part about this movie is the outfit that he wears.
Which one? Because I was going to say there's the jumpsuit that he wears for the game show.
Yeah, that
there's
one.
There's the hilarious Hawaiian shirt that he wears.
No, the jumpsuit. Jumpsuit. And funnily enough, this was on TV last month or something. It was before my surgery. And I was babysitting my niece. And my mum and I were trying to film her in her little swing, and the film was playing in the background, and then really loudly, we've got Arnold going, "Fuck you," and my mum was all, "Oh my God, it's going to be on the tape we're making." But, you know, my niece was sitting there wide-eyed watching The Running Man. Classic. I think she's an Arnie fan.
Rather than into your stomach, ah! But, then, funny enough, that was the, that movie, I played a clip in our very first podcast together of him saying, "Hi, cutie pie." And so that's definitely going to hold a special place in my heart.
Indeed.
But it was definitely, I mean, it's a terrible story. Him being set up and the game show aspect. I mean, it's pure fun. It's just hysterical to watch. And the villains are so over the top. And Jesse the Body Ventura also makes a big return and would totally beat the living shit out of Arnie, in my humble opinion, in that movie, because he was a monster back then. Maybe not now. Well, actually, I don't know if either of them could do anything now, but it was definitely a lot of fun. It had a lot of very funny, memorable characters, everybody he played alongside. And yeah, it's definitely, I could pop in the Blu-ray every now and then just for a laugh and just a fun old time. It's definitely got some of his most memorable quotes.
Oh, yeah. It's just, you either love or hate this movie, hands down. It's just the way it is.
I mean, amazing. Jim Brown as Fireball. You know, it's like, okay, are you serious? Like, hey, Christmas tree! And, you know, it's like, oh, fuck me. Am I seriously watching this movie?
Yes,
but
you seriously are. Then you realize who are,
and you just lean back and just turn off your brain and enjoy. Yeah,
it's exactly what it is. Just sit back, relax, enjoy the show.
Exactly. Which very few people seem to be able to do these days.
Yeah.
But moving on, another one that is also definitely one of my faves of growing up, and I don't know, it's kind of known to some people, not known to too many. But I'm gonna go with the Robin Williams classic, Good Morning Vietnam.
Ah, one I haven't seen for a long time, but it's very
and good. I haven't seen in a long time either, but I gotta be honest with you, Robin Williams, it proves that man has acting ability. He of course he's always been a brilliant actor, but just the combination of an amazing supporting cast and a very original story and very inspiring, that's definitely one of my faves for that year in particular. Just overall, one of my favorite Robin Williams films ever.
Yeah, mine too.
Definitely a lot of fun. Then, if moving on with God, there's so many for 87. It's
oh my God, I'm trying to narrow my list down because like there's just so many.
I hear ya. But I could definitely keep going on it. And another for my third. Maybe I've done, Running Man and that for now. Okay, so next one, which is, I'm pretty sure, a not very well-known film, is one called Wanted Dead or Alive with the famous Rutger Hauer starring as a bounty hunter.
Ooh.
And he's basically a bounty hunter for hire. And the funniest part of the movie is that the main villain is a terrorist played by Kiss legend Gene Simmons.
Oh, yes, I know which movie this is now.
It is, and it has one of the most classic scenes ever of Rutger catching him in the end, and he's worth more alive, obviously, if he's been caught. And he's got a grenade stuck in inside Gene Simmons' mouth, and like this Gene's character has really ruined a lot of things for Rutger. And basically, Rutger walks up to him and said, "Fuck it, you're not worth it." And he pulls the pin out of his mouth and the freaking grenade, and he just explodes into like 1,000 pieces. It's just classic cheese, but it's such a great action flick and great character, and definitely another one of my childhood favorites.
Back to me, and I'm just going to quickly mention some movies. I actually forgot to mention one because I completely just overlooked it on the list. Chuck Norris classic, Missing in Action.
Oh, yeah.
Can't go past that one. I have to mention the Chuck Norris, but yes, that's just a quick mention. Another quick mention would be Police Academy, which is a classic in the comedy world. Oh, man. Like, watching that again, it's just like this movie's so fucking retarded.
It is. They're all retarded, God. But they're so precious.
There's just the first one. So, yeah. A really good movie that I think this one's a bit under the radar for a lot of people. And it came out recently on DVD here. Recently, I mean, like, I think it was late last year or early this year. I can't remember. The Pope of Greenwich Village, starring Mickey Rourke and Eric Roberts.
Haven't seen it.
It's a really, really good film. Definitely, like, one of Eric Roberts' best roles. And Mickey Rourke, again, he's pretty cool. It does have Daryl Hannah in it, but this is all right. And fun fact, if you watch Entourage, this is Vinny Chase's favorite movie.
But, I just watched a Ferrari Gold, I gotta be honest.
But yeah, I mean, this one, I'd highly recommend it. It's a good movie. Yeah, one that I was glad to finally put in my DVD collection because I just was searching high and low to get it, and it was ridiculous trying to get it.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah, just a quick, some more quick little mentions. We got Revenge of the Nerds, the first one.
First, yep.
Yeah. Nerds. Yeah, the movie that gave the stereotype to nerds. Let's see, there was Romancing the Stone with Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner.
Which pretty good.
It's a classic. It's not bad.
Yeah.
Then it was followed by a sequel, but I think this one was better. And Danny DeVito, pretty awesome, gotta say.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
But a film I'd really like to go into a little bit more, which was, you know, kind of like one of those ones I was watching when I was just before becoming a teenager, is 16 Candles, another John Hughes film.
Arguably his best.
And, yeah, I just completely love 16 Candles. It's just such, just, it's a guilty pleasure. Where you've got the awkward girl and it's her 16th birthday and she's got the hots for the, you know, the hot guy at school, and the night of her birthday, you know, all she wants, I think, is to kiss the boy.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, does it happen? Well, what do you think?
No.
The ending is one of the sweetest scenes. And one of the funniest things is, like, when she gives the geeky kid her underpants.
Anthony Michael Hall.
Oh, yeah.
How far he's come. And he looks nothing like when he was a kid.
Oh, I know.
Never recognized him in 1,000 years.
Yeah, he's definitely grown up a little bit.
He did. I remember seeing him in The Dark Knight. I was like, you are fucking kidding me. There's no way that... There's no way. No.
Well, yeah.
It's not him. I refuse. But turned out, holy fuck, it is.
Mm.
But, no, and between Dong Duck Dong and...
Oh, God, yes.
Cinematic genius. It's just fucking comedy. And even her little brother is a fucking riot. It, like, that kid was... I swear he's my my lost half-brother, but it just... I definitely have that same attitude if I had a an older sister.
Mm.
But...
And wasn't
I agree.
I'm trying to think if it was this movie when I think it was like her mum or something, or a grandma, like, fills her up because she doesn't have boobs.
her boobies are starting to, yeah, it's her grandmother when they arrive.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
How embarrassing.
Her boobs are starting to fill out.
Yeah, that's right.
And then the grandfather's like, oh. I'm like, oh my God.
The next movie that I'll go into a little in, you know, bit more detail is Starman, which it's a John Carpenter movie with the great Jeff Bridges.
Another one I haven't seen.
Hmm, he was nominated for an Oscar for his role as well.
Was he?
Hmm. And this movie it's kind of sad in a way. Like the main character, the lady, played by Karen Allen. Her husband recently died, and alien comes to Earth and he takes the body of her dead husband, and they kind of, it's kind of like a road movie a little bit. It's hard to explain because it's kind of one that you just really need to sit down and watch, but yeah. Jeff Bridges as, you know, the star man, because he doesn't really know how to be human, so he's kind of an oddball.
Hey, man!
But it's just, it's a really, really good, really good film, and it's something a little bit different from John Carpenter, but it's definitely, definitely worth checking out if you haven't seen it, which you haven't. It's a very, bit of an emotional movie because it's got that element where she's had her husband has passed on, but, you know, here he is. His body's there, but it's not actually him.
Talking and breathing. Yeah.
And
flying around.
You know, all the other crazy stuff that's going around. It's really, really good. And, you know, to say that Jeff Bridges was nominated for an Oscar for the role, you know that he's absolutely awesome in it.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, definitely one worth checking out. I'm going to quickly just try and finish up my list.
Okay.
And then I'll hand it back to you to finish up yours. One I'll just quickly mention was Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, which...
Hell yeah!
Yeah, not the greatest Star Trek film.
No.
But you do get Christopher Lloyd as a Klingon.
He's awesome in that. It's an odd numbered Star Trek film, so it's obviously not going to be popular.
Yeah, I mean, it's all right, but yeah, it's not the best.
No.
Yeah.
It's definitely emotional.
Yeah, but yeah, there's not much to really say about it. Next movie I can talk about a little bit more. Is one of my favourite movies ever, with one of my favourite characters ever, and I think probably obvious what it would be, and it's Supergirl. Poor Supergirl, it is really not the greatest film. It's known as being a pretty bad film, and it did get some Razzie nominations. but I do love this movie, and I just think that Helen Slater was the perfect Supergirl. She's so beautiful. She's just so sweet and elegant, and she really is just Supergirl. And you can just go and fly with her. Well, I'll go and fly with her anyway.
I thought she was Supergirl.
She was awesome. Faye Dunaway as Selina, the baddie, is just so over the top and so campy. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
All the sort of witchcraft stuff is just goes over your head. The storyline, I mean, the story they could have done could have been so much better, but, you know, it is what it is, and it is a guilty pleasure amongst other things. But, you know, as a kid, you don't notice how bad it can be. And it's all like, oh, I want to be Supergirl. And it's just like, I want to fly. And she was just, you know, she was the best thing ever.
Yeah.
And, it is just something. I watch it a lot. I really do. I enjoy Supergirl.
Definitely a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is a fun movie. It's just a shame that Christopher Reeve didn't have the cameo in the film, which he was supposed to have.
Yeah, I remember that being the case.
Which is a shame. But, there is a big poster of him in the film, so he's kind of there. I do believe that he actually accompanied Helen Slater to the premiere of the film, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is one of my all-time favourite films. And I went through a lot of trouble to get the limited edition DVD two-disc set, which they only made a certain amount of copies of. So yeah, big, big man. And very happy that I was born in the year of Supergirl the movie.
Mm.
And I think this will probably cap off my 1984. And again, one of my all-time favourite movies. And I do have the poster on my wall. And I've seen it many times. And that would be Terminator.
The original.
Arnold and Linda and Michael. How can you go wrong with the Terminator?
Nope. Yeah.
The film that gave us James Cameron. Because I don't really think Piranha 2 gave us James Cameron.
He's definitely an American treasure. Canadian treasure. But he was originally Canadian. But, yep, he's definitely the man, and Terminator was gave birth to quite a few things.
Indeed. This is, aside from the sequel, it's like the ultimate sci-fi action film, really.
Yeah, up to a point.
I mean, it does slow down a little bit, but you've got to have that character development in it. But a lot of the scenes where you find out what's going on, they're actually done on the run, so that is, like, pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
They really try to keep it going and keep you guessing, and just Arnold is just a monster in this movie.
That was his pro bodybuilding days.
This is one of the rare times he plays a baddie.
I don't think he's done it ever again, has he?
A movie that won't mention. He's kind of a bit cold in it, if you get what I mean.
Yeah. Is that supposed to be an ice joke?
Yeah, whatever, but we won't mention that.
Come on, Marcy. Chill.
Ice to see you.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway.
Mr. Freeze. Anyway, no. That is no question of that. He definitely gave birth to a new genre of horror action. And, I don't know. It depends on what you consider horror.
Well, it does have horror elements, but it's got sci-fi elements, it's got action elements. It's a bit of...
it's got everything.
It's a bit of everything. It's got a love story in there, but it's a love story that's... it's all right. It doesn't piss you off. It didn't piss me off. I mean, you know that it's going to head that way, but...
Yeah.
The chemistry between those two just worked so well.
Yeah, Linda, you know, Hamilton boobies and...
Yeah, there was that.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Got a homemade explosives and that just breeds romance, doesn't it?
Indeed. I mean, the effects they're a bit shitty now, but
you know what, at the time they were fantastic.
You know, back then, well, I remember watching it as a kid and I was like, whoa, pretty that's scary awesome. Stuff. And it's like, oh, I wouldn't want one of those after me.
True. But and it was only succeeded by the second movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, that movie at the time was the most expensive film ever made, groundbreaking. You know, technology for the effects. What can you say?
Yep.
But
that's Cameron for you.
Yeah, I mean, this movie, Terminator, is a classic. And it... What can you say about Terminator that hasn't already been said, really? And it does have a fantastic soundtrack. It's got some good 80s tunes. It's got a good score.
Rapido.
Good stuff. And this movie, it was released in the US 3 days before I was born. How's that?
Really?
For trivia. Mm-hmm.
That's what it was meant to be then.
Indeed. And I mean, this movie's budget was $6.5 million and it grossed $78 million. So that's a big success, you know, especially for that year.
Yeah, that was that was another Stan Winston creation out of what Cameron had envisioned.
Yep.
So I'm sorry, I gotta give Stan credit where it's due every time.
Indeed. And I guess that was like the movie to end it off, but I should mention This Is Spinal Tap, because that is like a classic mockumentary film, but I really don't remember it at all, so it's really hard for me to actually talk about it in the least.
Cry laughing.
So but it's one I think like I should watch it again so I can try and actually freaking remember the film. So I just remember them on The Simpsons more than anything.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's a wrap for 1984 for me. If I've left out movies that people really like, we'll do your own podcast and discuss them. That's all I can say.
Exactly.
And I'll hand it back to you to finish off your year in movies.
So I'll do the same as you. And 1984 was definitely a great year. And I'm going to name off a couple of flicks that were definitely some of my all-time favorites for that year. First off, starting with a Steven Spielberg classic that definitely should be better known with films like Saving Private Ryan, all the others, as a classic war period film, and that is Empire of the Sun.
Yes, this is like one of my favorite movies ever, and it's my favorite Spielberg movie.
And I agree. It's definitely... one of his most realistic, one of his most awe-inspiring and emotional runs.
It is a very emotional film. And this is one that I used to watch all the time as a kid. It's like one of my dad's favorite movies, so he'd always put it on. And I was always like, you know, the kid in this movie, he's kind of like got this cute thing about him. And it turns out it was Christian Bale. his first movie.
If only we had known.
Yeah, and it's got a very... a really good performance by John Malkovich. It's definitely just something that always sticks out in my mind. But this,
the whole cast.
But this film, what used to like totally just freak me out about this movie is that they get invaded and he loses his parents and he's on his own. And the thing that used to scare me was like, oh my God, I don't want to lose my parents and be alone.
Yeah.
And oh, that just would freak me out because the key, like, he's from a like a rich British family and he has to like fend for himself. And it's like, something he just really doesn't know anything about and how to do, and then he goes into the camp, and that's where he meets John Malkovich, and yeah, such, oh, it's just an amazing film.
And then by the time, my favorite scene, other than him saluting the Japanese fighters when they land, you know, towards the end of it, he it's like saluting the enemy, but such a special scene. And then the final scene where he's reunited with his parents. And he's so traumatized by the things that he's seen and the things that he's been a part of, and he's a completely different kid.
Yeah.
When he comes back to them, he's nothing like what he was before. And it was definitely, it was Spielberg at his finest. So it's, I'll move on. And next one, which is definitely a classic of Psycho Bitches, and created the... it definitely scares a lot of guys. I'm sure when every guy starts a relationship with a girl, they think of this movie at some point, no matter how short, and that's Fatal Attraction. Glenn Close.
Please.
You know, Cooking Rabbit, you know, just...
I always remember that. It's like, it feels really sleazy and dirty, is the scene where they have sex in the elevator.
It's disgusting.
And
that's
just
never...
like, ugh.
There's nothing appealing about that scene. I don't know if... I'm not saying it's Glenn or it's, you're right. It's just a sleazy, dirty, yeah.
It's just like, why are you getting involved with this woman? You've got a lovely wife at home.
Yeah.
I mean, Glenn Close is like so freaky in this movie, and she's got that hair.
Like he almost banged Demi Moore in, you know, Disclosure. That I can understand a lot more than Glenn Close. But
she's just, she looks creepy in this movie.
But she does.
She puts on one hell of a performance, and
she did.
She
and there was
always
no question
does. And this was a very, very, you know, this didn't have the, you know, the biggest budget in the world, but it made a lot of money.
It did, and it didn't even need that much of a budget. It was just completely character driven. No special locations, no nothing. It was just very, very well done, and I definitely think it led the way for another new generation of like psychotic.
And if you ever hear of the term boiling bunny, that came from this movie.
Exactly. See the movie if you don't believe us, but anyway.
Bunny boiler. Another,
exactly.
It's
and I'm gonna go. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was gonna say it's one of those films, like one of those obsession films that they always pop up every so often. Someone becomes obsessed with the other person and it gets very dangerous.
Yep, especially when you, I can't remember, did he knock her up? I can't remember if she got pregnant.
I can't remember. It has been a while since I've seen it.
I think, I don't know if she was lying about it or trying to get his attention, but it's just, you know, that, let there be a lesson to everybody who wants to cheat.
Remember, there's
not
crazy...
Not even cheat, just choose the right person.
Yeah, there's
you want.
A lot of crazy people out there, and they'll get obsessed and start stalking you.
Yeah, exactly. And so moving on to the next one, I know I'm going to be naming a personal favorite for you, Marcy, and that is The Lost Boys.
Ah, I totally forgot, because Near Dark and The Lost Boys came out in the same year.
They did.
Hmm.
And what more can I say that hasn't been said 1,000 times by practically everyone who's seen it?
Yeah, I reckon, like, if you were to put Kiefer Sutherland's character David and Bill Paxton's character Severin together in a movie, like, back then, it would have been, like, the most fucking epic badass vampire movie ever. Because those two are, like, the best.
I totally agree. And it just between, you know, Feldman and... Haim, and it's just it's badass vampirism at its greatest.
Yeah, it's good stuff. But funnily enough, because you know how we always mention Twilight being so stupid and glittery, they actually used glitter in the blood in this movie.
Yeah, that's actually
interesting
true.
Fact, because it made it stand out more.
Yeah, which, you know, is totally acceptable. I mean,
but yeah. if you really look into this movie, it does feel a little bit with some homosexual undertones in it. But I do think that it was unintentional, because when you do listen to the commentary and Joel Schumacher actually jokes about some of the stuff, like not realizing it at the time, saying, you know, how there's a Rob Lowe poster in the room and he's like all shirtless. And he's going, I only put that there because I just worked with him. He goes, I didn't realize it was going to come off as being a bit gay.
Well, that's what happens when you, when you don't watch your dailies close enough. But yeah, it's I don't think there's a single vampire movie that's ever been made that doesn't have some form of, you know, other than the Blade series, that doesn't have some form of gay undertone. I mean,
yeah, I mean, this is kind of like Michael is sort of, you know, seduced by the group of vampires, but you know, it's more because of the female, but you know, the guys kind of want to mess around with him. And the one thing that really pisses me off in this movie is the amount of times they say Michael in this movie. It is insane. Every 2 seconds, Michael, Michael, Michael. And I'm like, shut up. Oh my God.
It's like swearing, except they just keep saying his name over and over again.
It's just like, how many times did you say his freaking name? Goodness me.
But it's definitely a classic.
Yeah. And this is one of the movies that totally made me, like, crush on Kiefer Sutherland for the longest time. I was just always like, oh, he's so hot in that movie. And he, like, does mullet well.
Oh, he is the Keef. There is no other Keef.
And I love him.
No question of that.
I don't care what he does. I'm still like, yeah, I love that guy.
You love him. No matter what.
Yeah.
And then, when he goes to blonde, there's no question of that. Mm. The lady swooned.
Yeah.
And then moving on, there's also a very funny movie that I always enjoyed as a kid. And I'm going to be bringing your man up in this one.
Ooh.
And it is the famous comedy Overboard.
Oh, yeah.
With Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
Yeah, this is I've got to say, this is quite a funny, fun movie.
Very
and,
funny.
Kurt Russell is just a bit of an ass in this movie because he fucks with Goldie Hawn's character.
And that's
just
what I love
about it.
Just
in the worst way, because she deserves
the
it, really.
Situation.
Yeah.
Full advantage. And his kids are hysterical.
Oh,
and
I know.
I mean, they're all freaking trailer trash, but they're all so much fun. And, you know, she, you know, eventually starts to realize, you know, the rich life isn't who she is.
Yeah. Because, you know, she's like a stuck-up bitch and blah, 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 and,
family's
you know.
Just a bunch of cunts, and
yeah.
It's like, you know, like, I couldn't fucking live in a society like that, especially now, but...
But she loses her memory, and Kurt Russell just decides, hey, I'm going to get a mom for my kids, and, you know, I'm going to fuck around with her.
Someone's going to cook and clean for us.
Yeah, because, you know, she was a total bitch to him. It's just
And then over time, they realize they really love her, and...
Yeah.
And it's just a really sweet and fun flick.
It works out for the best. And, oh, my God, I was so do Kurt Russell in that movie. But, yeah, whatever. I think that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, I'd probably do Goldie in that movie, too. But
And I don't know how true this is. I'm just seeing this on Wikipedia. They're saying the movie is being remade with J-Lo and Will Smith. That sounds like crap to me, but...
Yeah. I'm not even going to comment...
On how just retarded that would be.
Why do you need to remake it?
Oh, I don't know.
And why does J-Lo have to be in it? The woman brings in no money.
Like, I don't know.
I don't. Whatever.
But moving on.
Whatever. Goddamn. Anyway. Another quick little classic of cinema. The Princess Bride.
I haven't seen that for such a long time. I barely remember it.
Definitely, anybody who's seen it definitely loves it when they're a kid. It's unbelievably corny, but it just...
Yeah, I haven't seen it since I was a kid. I mean, I totally remember, it was like, he's getting read the story.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, Never-Ending Story where it's, you know, there's the kids reading a book, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But in this case, he's being read the book, and the kid is, what's his name, Fred Savage from The Wonder Years?
Yeah. Yeah, something like that.
And, yeah, we've got like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of classic characters in it.
For sure.
You got, like, Mandy Patinkin. And I do remember Andre the Giant being in it.
Andre, he was the man.
Mm.
Then there was a whole bunch of other sequels to actual movies that you named from 1984.
Yeah, apparently movies from 1984 decided to have sequels in 1987.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Actually, they were usually either the third or fourth movie in the series. We had Nightmare on Elm Street 3, yeah.
Dream Warriors.
The original. We had Revenge of the Nerds 2. Nerds in Paradise. Then we had Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol.
That was
Citizens
pretty bad.
On Patrol.
That was pretty bad. What was the other one? Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Yes, Beverly Hills Cop 2.
There was
that. And which was also hilarious. I love the second one. That was when Tony Scott, the director, was really starting to shine in the light, and definitely my faves. Then there was Superman 4.
Yes.
With the final Superman film that Christopher Reeve ever made.
Yeah, this movie, it had no budget, and there's so many problems with this poor film. Like, its heart was in the right place.
Yep.
But it just didn't really work.
It fell apart.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
It didn't even make back its budget.
John Cryer. Oh, my gosh. That's all I'll say about that.
Yeah. I know where you're going there.
Mm.
And, I'd say that about wraps up all the best stuff for 1987. And
yeah.
It was definitely a hell of a year. And like I said before, my absolute favorite will always be Predators. Predator. Sorry.
You're sorry, in that Predator mindset.
I keep going to the new one. There's only one Predator. It's not plural. Yeah the first Predator movie will always be my fave for that year.
Yeah, there's so many on, 1984. I cannot pick a favorite, but, it gave me Supergirl. So it's a good year to be born.
Exactly, and it gave me Predator for Elder Predator. There you go.
Indeed, and... because there were so many freaking movies in the years we were born, this has been, the podcast probably gone a little bit longer than usual, but I think we covered a lot of ground and got a lot of interesting films in there. So, this is, of course, a wrap for the podcast. And as usual, I'll thank my guest for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
And, until next time, Nick has been Nick, and I have been Super Marthy and very awesome. And, in the words of Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'll be back.
Remember that.
Mm.